The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
An abundance of greetings to you. I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his cosmologist, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 66 of The Big Picture for the week beginning July 3rd. And coming up on today's show, the fifth Ice Age movie. What on prehistoric Earth were they thinking?
We've also got bromance, buff bodies and bullying in the new adult comedy Central Intelligence.
And it's been 20 years since Independence Day smashed the entire world. And now it's the end of the world again with the release of the sequel, Resurgence.
20 years, Mark, since Independence Day came out.
I was but a lad.
You were but a lad. You were, and now you're just a little bit more than a lad. Ah, well, I don't know where I was going with that.
I know,
where we're going in this show, though, is you talking about Independence Day Resurgence later on. Before we get there, and as we do at the top of every show, Mark, we like to also do a quick whip around of other things that are happening at cinemas and on TV and around the place this week, including starting at cinemas on Thursday, Mark, the BFG, which sounds like a recipe for instant family film classic because you've got a Roald Dahl book being made, turned into a film on screen by Steven Spielberg.
And produced by Disney?
And produced by Disney. Like, all of that thing sounds like instant family film classic, is it? You can find out next week when Mark reviews it for us.
And coming up on TV, look, the second season of Marco Polo was released on Netflix Friday last week. It's a drama inspired by Marco Polo's early years in the court of Kublai Khan during the Mongol Empire. And basically, if you like ancient history, it takes you into the Yuan Dynasty and the establishment of Khanbalik, which for those insiders, we all know as Beijing today. Look, some critics have called this a fun, body-flinging, old-fashioned epic. I call it just...
Who's calling it that?
My mother.
Right.
But I call it fantastic TV. I saw season one of Marco Polo. Season two is on my must-play list. If you'd like to see it, it's available on Netflix now.
Something I don't think I'm rushing out for, Mark, is film hitting cinemas this Thursday, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. Have you seen the trailers for this?
Yes, that was enough.
It's a word of warning to parents whose kids grew up on High School Musical and think that Zac Efron just never moved on from those Disney movies. It turns out he has. And if you didn't see any of the Bad Neighbors movies, then Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates looks like it's going on a similar vibe, which is basically adults-only comedy involving sex and swearing. Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, it's opening this Thursday at cinemas.
And speaking of programs for adults, How to Stay Young releases this week on the ABC.
But you're but a lad, Mark.
I know. I personally don't need it, but other people might be interested in this show. Starts this Tuesday. This two-part series goes on a remarkable journey into the human body and mind and investigates the latest experiments and research that could help put the brakes on aging. Really? Possibly a little bit of hype going on. Might be worth a watch.
Mate, I'm a guy who lost his hair in his mid-20s, so... I don't believe that show at all.
Actually, hang on. It's over here.
Ah, thank you very much. Moving on to entertainment news this week. I caught the trailer this week, Mark, for Bridget Jones' Baby. That's right. There's now a Bridget Jones trilogy that started with Bridget Jones' Diary of the Movie in 2001. Edge of Reason was a sequel in 2004. I think I was one of the only people on the planet that liked that sequel, but I didn't expect that Bridget Jones would ever come back to screens, but she has in the form of Renee Zellweger again. And this movie has the very, how should we say, I don't know, interesting slash dubious plot line of Bridget Jones doesn't know who the father of her baby is. It could be Mr. Darcy, played by Colin Firth, or it could be a new bloke, played by Patrick Dempsey, who I think is now most famous for Grey's Anatomy. This film is coming out on 15th of September this year. That's right, Bridget Jones' Baby is true and real, and it's coming.
Do you think they could have a whole family of Bridget Jones? Like, what do we got next? Bridget Jones' grandchildren?
That's
Bridget Jones' great-great-grandchildren.
Bridget Jones' retirement party.
Okay, well, listen, far more interesting than that is R&B pop queen Rihanna joining the Star Trek franchise.
Oh, yes, great. Another Star Trek announcement on the big picture.
Be thrilled.
I am, well, yes.
Look, her song Sledgehammer, no, not a remake of the Peter Gabriel hit.
Oh, isn't it?
No, I would have thought
which,
it
actually,
be.
Which is good, because I really like that one. I don't want Rihanna to touch it.
Well, anyway, Rihanna has actually done a kind of Bond-like piece. Sounds very much like Adele in Skyfall, this sort of song about Sledgehammer. Listen up for it. It's now the theme to the highly anticipated, well, at least highly anticipated by me, Star Trek Beyond, which is releasing on July 21st, directed by Justin Lin, produced by J.J. Abrams, you know, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto. All those guys are on board the Enterprise, and I'll be with them there. Well, I actually won't be in the film, but I'll be very much sitting in the cinema. So I hope you'll see there. I hope I'll see you there on a transporter.
They'll give you a part Monday, Mark. You hang around long enough, they'll give you a part. As we mentioned, Mark will be talking about Independence Day Resurgence later in the show. Before we get there, though, for true or false this week, Mark, I thought I would pose a true or false about Independence Day, the original film. So, did Bill Pullman, who played the US president... President Whitmore, as you like to call him, in the original Independence Day from 1996, did Bill Pullman sit next to the actual US president at the time, Bill Clinton, at a special early screening of Independence Day in the White House? One of the most famous landmarks that they blow up in the original film.
I was thinking, can you imagine watching that film and then just looking up at the ceiling?
And just waiting for your moment. So, is that true, what I just said about Independence Day? Find out after this, which is what your kids are watching for this week, Mark. We're moving on to our first review for the show. It's winter in Australia, and you know what that means. It means frosty temperatures, freezing car trips, and babies dressed up like Michelin men. And another Ice Age movie. Yep, the makers of the greatest chillology on earth, chillology, I see what they did there, have looked at their bank accounts and thought, once more into the fridge, or something like that. So for what your kids are watching this week, Mark took a look at Ice Age Collision Course. It's the fifth film in this evolutionary saga, but Ice Age producers are still delivering the same messages for little minds.
Since the beginning of time, we have wondered how the universe came to be. A gloriously orchestrated plan? Or something much, much dumber?
20th Century Fox presents...
Oh, hello, mammals!
Buck, what are you doing here?
It's just beginning.
The mother of all asteroids screaming towards us. We go to that crash site, search for clues, and then figure out how to stop it.
Who's with me?
Crashing Eddie reporting for duty.
Mark, we've had five Ice Age films. I remember really quite liking the first one. Not so sure about the next couple. But what's left in the geological calendar to have a go at?
You even missed the one that came after the next two. We've had many of them.
Oh, there's been that many. Yes, we're up to five. So what's left? What can they do?
Not much.
Okay. You're a fan then, I tell you. No.
Well, what they've done, basically, is... the whole idea is to follow these sort of geological ages through. And really, for any kid who's following this, it's kind of like a crash course in evolution. They've smashed every sort of geological age of the planet together in the space of a lifetime of a couple of mammals, okay, to see if they can sort of tell a story. And in this one, they've really run out of geological ages to work with. So Scrat, you know, that acorn-obsessed sort of saber-toothed squirrel?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he discovers an alien spaceship buried in prehistoric ice.
Yep.
His bumbling leads to an outer space adventure during which he inadvertently creates the solar system as we know it.
I'm still following you, yes.
Yeah, yeah, you've got it. And then sets a huge asteroid on a collision course with Earth, ergo a plot.
Right, okay.
So what happens then is Manny and Diego the Sabertooth Tiger and Sid the Sloth now have to unite their families and friends in a new quest to avoid extinction, because they're always trying to avoid extinction, good on them. And they team up with this astronomer weasel named Buck, who has a plan to stop the meteor following the instructions of an ancient tablet he's found. And hey presto, they all go off to this wonderful land of Geotopia.
Sounds to me like you weren't terribly impressed with this, but this is a
movie. Honestly, it makes no sense whatsoever.
But it is a movie for kids. But then the past films in the franchise have traded heavily on this idea of how the world came to be. So is Collision Course trying to make the same point here? Is it delving into the beginnings of everything, let alone the endings of everything?
They have been plodding along this plot line mapped out by the theory of evolution, you know, with, of course, ice ages and then dinosaurs and continental drifts, and they've all been pushed together.
Do you think the filmmakers behind it are trying to actually push that message, or is it more of a framework? Do you know what I mean?
Manifestly. Whether or not they're trying to push it or not, they're certainly just assuming it as read, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
That this world came about by an evolutionary process.
Or by a squirrel in a spaceship who sets off
even underneath the joke, there's the idea, is there a plan? You kind of heard it in the introduction. Is there a plan to the universe? Or are we basically the victims of a series of great sort of natural forces and accidents? And basically we have to cope with those and we'll emerge. And it's the good people who emerge. And that is the plot line that has been sitting underneath every Ice Age film that has been released so far. You know, is our life in any way planned, or is it a series of random events? And it's well and truly random event after random event. It's the one joke that runs the entire way through.
Quickly, and separate to that kind of framework of Ice Age Collision Course, what did you think of it in terms of, is it funny? Is it entertaining? What are the characters like? Is it getting too long in the tooth?
It's getting too long in the saber tooth. I think the jokes... Thank you.
Jokes like that show up in Collision Course.
Try the veal. Look, in all honesty, it is pretty much the same standard of humour you've come to expect in Ice Age films. There's a lot of kind of toilet humour, fart jokes and all this sort of stuff. And it's just kind of tiring. There's also the thing that I actually dislike about it the most is not so much... Look, I find the whole evolutionary sort of spin wearying, okay? But let's face it, as a Christian, that is the basic assumption that sits behind society. So as a Christian, you have to deal with that. But the thing I don't like them putting in front of my kids, for example, is the way that the jokes all center on running people down. Now just watch it. Every joke is actually putting somebody else down. Manny is always running down Sid the Sloth, for that matter, so is Diego.
Diego the Tiger?
The saber-toothed tiger. They're all basically looking to see who can kick the legs out of the other one. Now, that's not humor. That's mockery. Mm. And that sort of humor is actually a really bad thing for kids to pick up. You don't want your kids wandering around the house going, how can I say something that makes someone over there look stupid?
And just finally, Mark, does religion show up at all in this movie? I can't remember it showing up any earlier in the Ice Age
franchise. No, we finally evolved far enough to take a real kick at religion. In this case, when we head off to Geotopia, we end up meeting this character called Shangri-Lama. Okay? Ha-ha. Okay, anyway... He's a well-intentioned sort of guru, mystical, religious, basically a stand-in for all things religious and faith-based.
Like a hippie llama?
Yeah, pretty much. He's teaching everybody yoga positions. And he's offering a way out, if you like, plot-wise, in the face of the great disaster that's coming. And so everybody tries to sort of get on board. But in the end, his whole sort of yoga come semi-mystical come religious approach to disaster is actually non-practical. He has a whole lot of social problems himself. He loses his temper really easily. He's got all these issues. I mean, in the end, the stand-in for religion in this film really is a failure when it comes to dealing with real-world problems. It's people like Manny the Mammoth who are going to manage to save us all in the end. And particularly for Ice Age, Buck the astronomer is the one who is going to work out all the pseudoscience and information we need to save our world. It kind of puts religion into very much a pat on the head category.
Ice Age Collision Course is rated G for very mild themes and coarse language, which consists largely of just the sorts of jokes you've been trying to get your kids to stop making around the house. It stars the voice of Ray Romano, John Leguizamo, Dennis Leary, Simon Pegg, and Queen Latifah, and is currently available, according to Mark, on way too many screens around the country. A big supporter of the big picture is Insights. Go to insights.uca.org.au and check out the reviews that they do each week. One of the regulars on our show, Russ Matthews, who got to fill in for Mark a couple of weeks ago, he reviews movies for them every week and provides his own Christian perspective on movies, including Ice Age Collision Course. Go and check out what he has to say. Here's a spoiler alert. He agrees with Mark. But he has some different...
Because he's smart.
But he has some slightly different reasons for it. Mark, before we talked about Ice Age Collision Course, I posed to you a true or false statement about the original Independence Day. So did Bill Pullman, who played the US president in the original Independence Day, sit next to the actual US president at the time of the film's release, Bill Clinton, at a special early screening of the movie at the White House?
This sounds so true, I'm going to go false. False, it didn't happen, or maybe something else happened instead.
Mate, it's so true. Everything I just said was true.
Really? They actually had a preview screening at the White House.
And apparently in the screening where there were some of the stars and the makers of the film, they were all very nervous about who was going to sit down the front with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton wanted to sit in the front row. And so Bill Pullman, the reigning president of Independence Day, said, sure, I'll go down and sit next to Bill Clinton. Apparently Bill Clinton liked it.
Who wants to sit in the front row? At a cinema. I mean, really.
The US president?
If you're the most powerful man in the universe, wouldn't you, the world, wouldn't you basically choose the middle row, middle seat?
Not if you're Bill Clinton.
No, I suppose not. Okay, well, coming up on the show, we actually have a chance to have a look at more intelligent things than that. Central Intelligence is along. We'll also have the much-promised sequel to Independence Day, Resurgence.
Welcome back to The Big Picture.
Indeed. I gave my verdict before the break on Ice Age Collision Course, but this week for our press record segment, Ben chatted with Hugh, an 11-year-old lad who has chosen to attend a very special preview screening of Collision Course because his expert opinion as a minor was required for promotional purposes.
So, Hugh, I thought I had a pretty cool job where I get to go and watch movies for free, but I think you've got an even better story than me going to free movies. Explain to us how you got to see Ice Age Collision Course before everybody else.
Nickelodeon was looking for a few kids to review the new movie. They asked our agency, and our agency probably asked a couple of kids. And
you're in a talent agency?
Yeah.
What are they called?
Random Management. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they got you to take a video of what your favourite TV show is, and they made you explain why, and then you sent it off to them, and they would send it off to Nickelodeon, then they would pick the kids, and yeah.
Mate, you must have done a pretty good job of reviewing that TV show. So you were selected with three other kids?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and then you got to go to your own private screening of Ice Age Collision Course. Now, did you do that on a Saturday or a Sunday?
No, I did it on a Friday.
Hang on a minute, Hugh. You understand that Friday is a school day, don't you? You know that.
Yeah.
Because you're only 11, so you're still going to primary school.
Yeah.
Mate, you got to have a day off school to go and review a movie.
Yeah.
It sounds awesome. Okay, does this story get any better?
Yeah, so when you finished watching the movie at Fox Studio, they gave you Ice Age gift packs, which are really cool.
What did you get in your gift pack?
So you got Ice Age 4, the movie, a flat cap, a bouncy ball, a keychain.
So you got all this stuff. What did you actually have to do? You must have had to do something on the day. You didn't just get given stuff. When you went into the movie, what did the people from Nickelodeon tell you that they wanted you to do?
So they told you to, just before you walked in, like to the cinema theatre place, they got you to walk in, be all excited, which everyone was probably pretty excited about it. So, yeah, you didn't really need to act for that bit. But then they got you to look like there's some funny bits and some shock bits, like scary bits. And
this is all before the movie's on.
Yeah, so you don't have to watch a movie. You're looking at a blank screen.
Ah, this is how publicity works for movies, Hugh. I see. Now, but you actually did get to watch the movie, right?
Yeah, there was a few little minor adjustments that needed to be fixed, but...
What do you mean, minor adjustments?
Some bits weren't fully animated, but it was fine because...
Hang on a minute, Hugh. Are you saying that you got to see an early cut of the movie, as in before the movie that comes out at cinemas, before everybody else gets to see it, you got to see an even earlier version than that?
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
But you're pretty important. And weren't you telling me before you also got free popcorn when you were in there?
Yeah. And I choked on some, but that's fine because nothing major happened.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, Hugh, what did you think about being a professional film reviewer?
Oh, it was great. I want to do it when I'm older. So.
Well, it sounds like you're already on the fast track to doing that. How can people get in contact with you, Hugh? If there's a new family film coming out, an animated film, say, Hugh, that's targeted at 11-year-olds, how can people find you and your skills?
Go to Random Management and look for me. Hugh Foster.
Thank you, Hugh, for joining us on The Big Picture.
That's okay. Anytime.
How cool is that kid? I feel threatened.
I did feel slightly intimidated throughout that. I considered not running that interview, Mark.
I mean, technically, he's got an agency. I don't have an agency.
Agents, if you're listening, we don't have an agency.
We're not represented.
If you can believe that.
It's an opportunity for you out there. Okay, right. Among the many new animated releases and FX-heavy blockbusters at the cinemas right now, muscling for some room is a new buddy comedy. Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart, Central Intelligence is one of those outlandish movies involving a rather odd couple in an extreme situation. You know, that sort of stuff. All dangerous and hellish for laughs. Well, Central Intelligence also seems to have a serious side about bullying. That, Ben's hoping, will help moviegoers think twice about how we treat others.
3 weeks ago, an enemy of the state stole the encryption keys to the entire U.S. spy satellite program.
I need your super sweet accounting skills to help me figure out the last piece of this puzzle.
You're like a chocolate Google. Boop, 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 boop.
But don't do it. Stop it. Stop it.
You were the coolest guy in school.
You're my only friend, Calvin. You're the only one in this whole world that I trust.
Now that you're in...
I'm not in.
I know, but they think you're in.
But I'm not.
Probably one of those perception versus reality things happening right now.
I am out!
I don't know. I actually got a laugh out of just listening to that and thinking, wow, that could be a good combination. Bromances, you know, haven't been around for a while, actually. And the guy who made Dodgeball made this one. Is it a kind of a welcome return to the bromance?
Yeah, the director, Marshall Rawson Thurber, whose name is rolls off the tongue, Mark. yeah, he hasn't been around for a while, unfortunately. I loved Dodgeball back in 2004. I thought that was fantastic. And the bromance movement that happened largely in the first decade of the 2000s, where every second movie seemed to have Ben Stiller, Will Ferrell, or Owen Wilson, or some combination of those three guys.
Or Ed Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn, you mean?
Vince Vaughn.
So the bromance has sort of died off a little bit, and maybe because they, I think, over-egged it, and just there were, how many scenarios can you do where a couple of dudes get together and, you know, hang out and say funny stuff? They were running out of ideas. But we're back, and this one's a bit of a mashup between a bromance and a buddy cop movie. And this one, it's not too much to give away because the trailers let you know that Dwayne Johnson is playing the adult version of a kid who was bullied terribly back in high school, is like the fat kid at school. And then you rocket forward like 20 years time, and he's now a CIA agent. And the guy who was voted to be the most successful, who was like the just most popular kid, absurdly, there's a flashback right at the start of the movie. It's absurd how popular this kid is at school and how many achievements he's got. He's played by Kevin Hart. Calvin is his name. And then if you flash forward to him 20 years time, he's just an accountant. No offense to accountants. The movie's trying to make a joke about accountants. So the contrast between them, you get them thrown together, and of course there's a mission, and Calvin gets roped into it and has to, you know, go on to help Dwayne Johnson's character save the day. That's what you've got here in Central Intelligence, Mark.
So that's the story in a nutshell, but yep. You're saying it's got a lot to do with bullying?
It does. So from that initial kickoff of seeing the background of the character that Dwayne Johnson's playing is Bob Stone when he becomes older, but he's like kind of changed his name, largely to do with sort of shame and humiliation and trying to reinvent himself. And he spent a lot of his life, as the movie goes along and explains, trying to get over how badly he was treated. And so there's this undercurrent throughout Central Intelligence of some sadness, actually, and it should cause you as an audience member to reflect somewhat. Saying that, Mark, we're in a bromance buddy cop movie. One that's it's good. It's not amazing. It wasn't as smutty. It wasn't as sexually charged. There are still a lot of jokes to do with the physical anatomy, but not as many as would have expected. There's this character in it, it's so obnoxious. This guy working in the office where Kevin Hart's character works, who's just he just parachuted in from another movie. He's like he's coming from an Adam Sandler movie, and he's just got to be that guy that says disgusting stuff for a couple of minutes and gets some cheap laughs and goes on. Some of the best things about Central Intelligence, Dwayne Johnson lands some zingers. Man, he gets some great lines, Mark. He got some of the best.
The Rock actually speaks.
The Rock, I think the best thing.
I mean, he actually, I shouldn't run him down. Dwayne Johnson's actually a good actor. But normally he's just given lots of flexing roles.
That's right. Most people probably know him from a lot of his action work, which hasn't really sort of taken off as much as you would have thought. However, he's a really strong, he's got a great presence on screen. He's got great comic delivery. And here he really owns it as this adult, dorky, daggy, dweeby guy who wears a unicorn t-shirt, but also like acts like Jason Bourne. And it's credible. It's amazingly credible. He's alongside this guy called Kevin Hart, who still isn't that well known to Australian audiences. I think he's been doing okay in the States, but he's the kind of guy that he's funny in parts. He's not as good as Dwayne Johnson. He just doesn't own it as much as Dwayne Johnson does. But the longer the movie goes along, it has to resort often to him shrieking and squealing, Kevin Hart, to be funny. That's meant to be hilarious.
Yeah, because Kevin Hart's the comedian, and sounds like he's playing the straight guy.
Yeah, he is, and then has to sort of do some eyes bugging out of his head and at various moments. And a lot of it's so outlandish, of course, that's what you do. And there are occasionally realistic moments in Central Intelligence you often don't get in this kind of movie, where people actually recognize how silly what's going on actually is and they call it for what it is. Should also point out that some great actors, Amy Ryan, Jason Bateman, and Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad, all star in cameos in this. And my hat goes off to Amy Ryan, who, in contrast to Laura Linney recently in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, where Laura Linney obviously just needed some money and just showed up in a suit and was like the fancy cop who just has to say all the straight lines, Amy Ryan, like, she really sells it as the head of the CIA trying to work out whether Dwayne Johnson's operative has gone rogue or not. She deserved a better movie than this one, which does, like, the longer it goes along, lets the wind out of the tires. You know, it overstays its welcome. The action's not very good, not very inspired. It doesn't all come together. And finally, when you get to the ultimate moment of kind of revealing what this movie is about, gets a bit preachy and really it feels more like a message that's being sent to six kids who are in like year 5 and 6 rather than the adults that would be in the audience.
That's one of the interesting things, because I know in the promotion of this film, didn't Johnson and Hart actually go to a school or things like that and actually talk against bullying? So yeah. they really are trying to use this as a vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, and fair play to them, which is great. Apparently, Dwayne Johnson was bullied as a kid, if you can believe that. And so they have been around at various high schools in the States going around talking about how uncool it is to bully, which is a great thing.
So does the film come anywhere near what we might say as Christians, for example, about how to confront bullying?
Mark, surprisingly, it does. There is a scene in this film, I'm going to try to talk about it cautiously and not give too much away, but there's an incredible moment in this movie where a character actually goes on with several lines of dialogue to explain how several years ago this character met God and they know God's in control of everything and they know
that they know
their life hasn't been great up until this moment, that now they understand that they're living with a purpose and that purpose is living for God, and that sometimes within the purpose that God has for them, moments appear in your life where you get to do things that that could involve something like, oh, I don't know, trying to make up for wrongs, which you can't do. So what you can do instead is ask for forgiveness. There is a scene in this movie.
Unbelievable.
That presents that. Now, it's played for joke, played for laughs, which is a bit of a disappointment. But I was amazed that in this movie about bullying, which is a serious topic, I think it's handled quite well in this film. But given it's a bromance buddy cop movie, there aren't too many people, I think, coming out of it thinking deeply about bullying. But this one scene in this movie, I thought articulated something about the forgiveness that's offered by God and why, if you understand your place in the scheme of things, in your relationship with God and how much God has forgiven you through Jesus Christ, why you would treat others better than yourselves and why you would seek forgiveness from other people if you'd done things wrongly to them in the past. This movie actually presents that.
So the information is there. You know, there's some jokes going on around it. Oh, well, look, I don't know. That actually doesn't sound terribly bad to me.
No.
Central Intelligence stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Kevin Hart, Amy Ryan, and Jason Bateman. It's now showing at cinemas everywhere and is rated M for violence, sexual reference, and coarse language. So beware.
The Big Picture is on the interwebs. You can find us on Facebook at The Big Picture Show. Let us know if you've got a favorite bromance, or at the other end of the spectrum, let us know if you've ever seen anything on screen to do with bullying or people being treated badly, but something that left you affected. So me and Central Intelligence, maybe not so much, although I do admire the bullying storyline going through it and how they're anti-bullying. But is there some movie, some documentary that you watched that really got you deep in the heart? Let us know at The Big Picture Show on Facebook.
That'd be fantastic. Look, still to come on the show, the end of the world as we know it. Actually, we're having a look at Independence Day sequel Resurgence. Welcome back. Fancy an end to the world soundtrack edition? Well, we couldn't go past REM.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and aeroplane. Lenny Bruce is not a crane. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world serves its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Beat it up a knock speed.
The world as we know it. to buy mountains, sit in a line. Leonard Bernstein, Leonard Brasnap, Lenny Bruce and Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, but nap, right?
Going to have to forgive us for fading down. You'll get the idea after a while. It goes on very much like about the end of the world. In fact, the weird thing about REM's The End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine song is it's actually got its own little cult following going because it has this sort of repetitive nature to it. So it was played repeatedly for a 24-hour period with brief promos to introduce a new format on a radio station, WENZ 107.9 in Cleveland. And they just basically played the whole song back to back for 24 hours.
I wonder if that's ever been done before or since.
It has. With the same song on the same radio station. A few years later, they changed.
Don't they have a budget for any other music?
They changed the format again in 1996 and did the whole 24 hours of REM, It's the End of the World as We Know It again, back to back. It's actually it's the theme song of a restaurant too. In Walt Disney's World Resort near Orlando in Florida. So you go there and you eat. And basically listen, the restaurant's called the Restaurantosaurus in the park's dinosaur-themed area, and they just keep playing The End of the World. I think after you sort of the 10th time, I'm thinking dinosaurs might actually be ready for the Ice Age apocalypse. You know, it would be enough.
Wow.
You'd be over it.
I've got nothing to say, apart from we're now at the point in the show, Mark, where you are going to tell us about Independence Day Resurgence, the biggest movie around. But 20 years ago, a certain American president declared, "We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're not going to live up. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day scene." Just landing at cinemas now, though, is the sequel to 1996's Independence Day, that epic science fiction film that did so much to help Hollywood define the term blockbuster. Independence Day Resurgence drastically simplifies the laws of science for the sake of a good story, as it would, and sops every religion on the planet into one bucket, so we can all go kicking alien butt together.
Why are they screaming?
They're not screaming. They're celebrating.
They're coming back. It has its own gravity.
What goes up must come down.
Shouldn't we be nervous?
Yeah.
Our whole lives built up to this moment.
It's touchdown over the Atlantic.
Which part?
All of it.
Make them pay.
Not going up there to make friends.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm going to try and be serious now.
Please.
Two decades after the first Independence Day invasion, Earth is faced with a new extrasolar threat. But will mankind's new space defences be enough? Well, it wouldn't be much of a movie if they were. Look, it's a reunion film of sorts. Resurgence brings back Jeff Goldblum's Dr. David Levinson, who's now head of a special space division that's supposed to be ultra-prepared for what we all knew was one day going to happen, the return of the aliens.
And he was like the second main guy with Will Smith in the first movie, wasn't he? Yes.
And it would be everything we were expecting, unless you paid attention to the plot in the first film, which basically said they were a single species on a spaceborne existence, and if we destroyed them, that would be the end of it. No, apparently they're not.
Mark, come on, there's no time for consistency here.
Sorry for pushing the details. Anyway, the aliens turn up like clockwork on the 20th anniversary day.
They've just been looking at their watches.
They've probably got the invite. And the world is once again impossibly outgunned unless two fearless pilots, a by-the-book hero played by Jesse Usher and a hopeless maverick played by Liam Hemsworth.
Oh, Australia's own Liam Hemsworth.
There you go. If they can work out some way not only to work together, but to save the species, they'll be able to save us all. Or maybe they won't. Yeah, I'll leave that little bit unstated.
And this is also being directed by Roland Emmerich, the guy who made the first Independence Day movie, and then he's made heaps of end of the world blockbuster movies, hasn't he? Everything from 2012 to The Day After Tomorrow. He's that guy.
In fact, he's made so many blockbuster films now, destroying so many big things, that I think he should be investigated. I think there's enough evidence now. This fella needs some counseling.
He's got a conspiracy against us. Were you a fan of the original film?
I was.
Did you go back and watch it before going to see this? Have you seen it in living memory? I haven't seen it for a long time.
No, I've got a copy of it.
I've got have very strong memories of it, but I haven't seen it for a while.
I've got a copy of it. And as a writer, actually, weirdly, you might think this is going to sound strange, but as a script writer, I really like the presidential speech. So Whitmore's speech is actually probably one of the most inspiring little presidential speeches I've ever seen in film. It's really well done.
Oh, yeah?
You know, really well set, really well paced, really well delivered. It's great. And look, I think it's also a benchmark film for the time. Like, I remember actually lining up to see this. It was amazing. The special effects really were not only setting the standard for that year, but probably for years to come.
It also had one of the best marketing campaigns, even in living memory, but up until that point, definitely. And particularly the promo, they had that teaser trailer where they blew up the White House. And so many people, even if they've not seen Independence Day, know that image and know that moment. But that pretty much like took that film around the world instantly as something that everybody has to rush out to see.
And it was one of the first films to actually do that around the world, like embracing storyline. So all sorts of things got blown up. I mean, we think it's just par for the course now that they blow up the Eiffel Tower, they blow up, you know, something.
Big Ben, the Opera House.
Yeah, the Opera House. But Independence Day was one of the first films to actually really collect that all together. And of course, it had Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum's odd couple antics, which were really a great match on screen. The two played off each other really well and did great.
So 20 years have passed. A lot of people would still fondly remember Independence Day. And you know, we know that 20 years isn't that big a gap for sequels. Things come back like this all the time. And no one's surely taking Independence Day seriously. The resurgence, right? Like, it's just good fun. That's what I'm expecting from it.
I don't think it's anywhere... I don't think it's anywhere near as much fun as you'd think. I mean,
what?
It's not that I had huge expectations. I knew I was going in for an eye candy film. But halfway through the film, when the fellow, you know, two seats to the right of me started snoring really, really loudly, initially I thought to myself, I better wake him up or, you know, he might be missing something. And then I thought, nope, actually, he's probably getting the best part of this film.
Ouch, what's so snoreworthy about Independence Day Resurgence?
The special effects are there, and that's pretty much all that can be said about it. They're kind of pointless, too, to the point of being unbelievable. This spaceship that lands on the planet is so large, it pretty much covers a quarter of the globe. But that doesn't apparently affect the atmosphere or the rotation of the planet or like the science is just
Mark,
way
details,
out
Mark, details.
Sorry. Look, the three presidential speeches that are in this film, none of them measure up.
Three?
I know there are three from three different presidents. I just want to say there's a certain attrition going on in this film. Okay? I mean, it seems like the moment you get made president, you get to make a speech and everybody draws back for the moment. Look, the new Will and Jeff pairing between Liam Hemsworth and Jesse Usher is just inexplicable and uninspiring.
And
it's
Will
weird.
Smith isn't back, is he?
Will
he's
Smith
is the only original
the
main
only
star
guy
not
who
back.
Didn't turn up, and so I think out of sheer vindictiveness, they killed him. Like, so he was a victim of a test pilot accident. There you go. But worse, the plot just rushes over the human tragedy, so you never really feel any sympathy for the countless millions that are dying all around. It just becomes cardboard.
Whereas I think you did in the first, surprisingly, for such a let's blow up the world movie.
Because they
spent
time.
You felt something
time.
For the people.
They spent time. You see, what they did in the original script is they spent time running a plot line about the human tragedies, so like families trying to get back together, convoys of mobile homes just trying to find a safe place to park. You had also, and then they brought it together whilst they were running the overarching Save the World storyline. All these little storylines were going underneath. None of that. It's just all big hero action stuff. And really, it just pales after a while. And what's more, they have to assert some really stupid things. They make these really incredible plot leaps. I won't tell you about them. You'll just enjoy groaning when you see them. And it asserts that a species capable of developing advanced space-borne weaponry apparently gets frustrated by school buses and don't know how to duck, you know, when it's time. You know, so, I mean, there's just stuff you just think... Really? Is this, it's beggar's belief.
You spoke earlier in the show about Collision Course. If you're listening to The Big Picture this week on the podcast, just rewind or whatever the expression is. Go back and listen to Mark's Ice Age Collision Course review, then come back here. Because my question is, in the same period of time as cinemas where the world's coming to an end, Ice Age Collision Course, and you mentioned there, it's got an evolutionary backdrop, and so God doesn't really show up in that film. Does God show up in Independence Day Resurgence? So we're heading towards the world being destroyed again. Even by the finale, does God turn up?
Well, the weird thing is, in the first film, Independence Day, there actually was a presence for God and a presence for faith. You know, so Dr. Levinson's father actually returns in this film, but he was kind of a faith figure in the first film. In this one, he actually is driving a bus full of kids, and the kids are all freaking out. They're worried about their situation, what's going to happen, and he says, "Have faith." And one of the kids just turns around and says to him, "My parents just died." And that's the answer to your suggestion that you should have faith. So straight away, we're put into a context of, that's very nice of you to suggest this whole sort of platitude of have faith, but what does that have to do with real suffering? And I think the second thing that really sort of threw me in this is not terribly unexpected, but one of the many presidential speeches, 20 or something of the presidential speeches that get done in this film, one of them, the president calls on all people of all nations and all creeds, you know, to pray for our salvation, because we are all one people now. And I thought that was just classic for the 21st century to take
There's no all differentiation people. Between religions yeah. and faith systems.
So you can only really conclude one of two things when you start throwing all creeds together in a sentence like that. Either A, all of them are just uniquely well-meaning and don't really mean anything, or there is really only one God. But in the end, prayer has got nothing to do with the salvation of the species, as it turns out. It's all about people pushing the right buttons at the right time, usually with only about a quarter of a second to go. Amazing how we can never do it maybe 10 seconds earlier. But there you go.
Independence Day Resurgence is busy filling cinemas all over the place. It's rated M for science fiction themes and violence. It stars Liam Hemsworth, Jeff Goldblum, Bill Pullman, Brent Spiner.
Spinner, that's Star Trek fans for you.
Spinner, Spiner. Sorry.
Brent Spiner.
His character is Spinner.
He's Data. Sorry, Data.
What?
From the Star Trek series.
I'm so confused.
Don't worry.
And Charlotte Gainsborough also is in the movie.
Okay. Well, listen, if you're actually interested in stuff that's kind of being recycled for the cinemas, then you really should get along to the next edition of Eternity. Eternity Newspaper is a great supporter of The Big Picture. In the July edition, you're actually going to see Ben talking all about the sort of things that are coming out this month in the terms of repeating the same old, same old.
So many.
The all-female remake of Ghostbusters, the latest dose of Star Trek, and of course, another version of Tarzan. They're all in the cinemas this month. And many of us lament such repetition and complain that movie makers have no new ideas, but the truth is we like it. Box offices are doing a roaring trade. Can such cinema trends help us understand the positive value of the sort of habits we have? Well, read Ben's article and make up your own mind, or let him make it up for you.
Please allow me. Still to come on the show, what the Bible has to say to our kids about the end of the world, and then my top 5 tips for being well dressed for the apocalypse, because if you're going to go out, you should go out in style.
You're with Mark and Ben. Welcome back.
Well, we've been talking about the end of the world since the beginning of the show with Ice Age Collision Course, and now it's nearly the end of the show. We've spoken about Independence Day Resurgence, and I'm very soon going to get onto my top 5 what you should wear at the end of the world list, Mark. But actually, the end of the world is quite a serious thing, as much as we can make some jokes about Collision Course and the like. And if we're a parent, how do we go about teaching our kids about the end of all things? Well, hospital pass to Bible Society Australia's CEO and social commentator Greg Clark for hints on how to begin talking about the end with what the Bible has to say about the end of the world.
When justice is done, says Proverbs 21 verse 15, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to evildoers. I well remember the day after September 11, 2001. I'm sure you know the date. It was when two planes flew into the Twin Towers in New York City, arguably the defining event of the 21st century thus far. Well, the next night, either by divine appointment or just bad luck, I happened to be reading the Bible story of Samson the Strong Man to my then young children. I was horrified. A man pulls down two pillars to destroy a room full of people in a devastating act of judgment. Well, in the moment, I tried desperately to flick to a nice Jesus Makes More Bread story instead, but I was too slow. My intrigued 6-year-old had seen the muscle man who had his eyes blinded on the page, and it just had to be that story. By the time the Philistines have chained Samson to the pillars, my boys were sure that something big was going down here. And as those pillars broke and everyone was crushed underneath, I was recoiling in horror at what I was reading. The images of the Twin Towers were racing through my head, as if Samson were chained between them. It seemed unthinkable that all those people would be destroyed, all those lives lost, and Samson lost along with them. The parallels with New York weren't neat, but they were disturbing. But I needn't have been worried. The kids got the story much more clearly than I did. They deserved it, said my firstborn son, who is actually a very much a peace-loving child, believe me. Yeah, his younger brother agreed. And you know, they were right. In this story in the Bible, the God-hating, Israel-oppressing Philistines deserved the judgment that came upon them. They were actually getting their dues. Samson's is a story of justice being done, of God venting his wrath and displaying his righteous jealousy for his people. In one sense, the Bible really isn't a book for children. These stories are profound, containing extraordinary lessons that adults struggle to accept. Deep and difficult truths about love and justice, about sin and punishment, about where the world is headed. But in another sense, it's only kids who really get what's going on. They are far clearer about good and evil, about punishment and reward, than adults tend to be. They know that evil should be punished and good rewarded. They get it. In your journey to prepare your kids for adulthood, don't shirk from the hard stuff. Kids are up to it, often more so than you. And even through horrific stories such as Samson's, the Bible is a great book to read in order to teach them the good, the bad, and the ugly about themselves and their world.
Coming to the end of the show, Mark, which has looked a little bit like an end of the world show, given we've been talking about Collision Course and Independence Day resurgence. So while all those things were going around in our heads, we thought, oh, we should do a top five things to wear at the end of the world list.
But then, there's an insight into our sort of production meetings each week.
I know, and then we get to this point and realize, oh, what we're about to do is describe things for people listening.
In an audio format, we're going to do some visual jokes. So prepare yourself.
So here goes with the top five things to wear at the end of the world.
Five.
Mark, it depends on what's going to happen at the end of the world as about what you're going to wear. That makes sense, doesn't
it? Sure.
And so if you were preparing for the end of the world, according to some movies, what you would really want to wear is something warm. Because depending on the vision of the future that is coming our way, once we survive the end of the world, you might need to rug up a bit. So I've chosen for number five the parka that Viggo Mortensen's character wears in The Road from 2009. An honourable mention goes to The Day After Tomorrow, and Jake Gyllenhaal has to really suit up against the onslaught of cold weather that comes through. But my goodness, I thought Viggo Mortensen looks really quite good in his ratty parka getting around the
knit. Accessible Kmart parka.
An accessible Kmart parka. He also put his boy in one because it was super cold. So I just figured that just had a practical... There's a practicalness to that, Mark, that I really quite liked. And so you can sleep in it.
So I'm going to build my wardrobe for the end of the world starting with a parka. Great.
Four.
I was also then thinking about further comfort, Mark, and I want to give some honourable mentions in my comfort selection at number four. One of them goes to, there's an Australian film called These Final Hours. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Was that any good?
No.
Oh.
It's awful.
Oh, I thought it kind of sounded interesting, an end of the world movie set in Australia made a couple of years ago.
It was a really nice idea about a guy having to take care of this young girl who sort of gets abandoned, get her home. Home for what, you know, when you ask yourself, because it's the end of the world.
Yes.
But yeah, it just turned into a kind of a schlock fest.
Oh, well, I wanted to give that an honourable mention because one of the characters in that film just wears a singlet as when it's heading towards the end of the world. I thought that looks very comfortable. Also, in 2012, one of the young kids in the movie constantly goes on about how they have to wear nappies throughout the film because they're growing up and they haven't quite been toilet trained. But I thought, well, I'm not saying I want to wear nappies, Mark.
But that's kind of appropriate if there's some shocking stuff going on.
I know. It looks kind of comfortable and practical in as much as things go bad. Well, you never know when you're going to need a nappy.
So I'm building up a picture of you at the end of the world now. Parka, singlet and nappies.
However, at number four, I've decided to go with the lovely ensemble of an Argyle jumper, you know, an Argyle print jumper and a hoodie that Steve Carell wears in Seeking a Friend for the End of the World in 2012, mainly because that's the kind of stuff that I like to wear. I like to wear that already. And I think if the end of the world's coming, I don't want to change my wardrobe. I don't want to go have to buy new stuff because it may not even last like what's going to come on the other side.
No, I think you still had me on the singlet and the nappy.
Oh, man, come on.
Three.
The end of the world, depending on which scenario you are finding yourself in and when it comes to movies, Mark, you may or may not know if it's going to happen. And you may not know if it's just about to break or in the case of some movies, you've kind of almost slept through it or been in a coma or what happens. You wake up one morning and discover the world actually ended.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got to go about what you're doing in what you're wearing. And so in the case of 28 Days Later from 2002, Cillian Murphy's lead character in that film has to wear a hospital gown for like the best part of like the opening 20, 30 minutes of that film. So he's walking around an abandoned London. Have you seen 28 Days Later?
I'm just thinking, you know, you probably feel exposed enough given the fact that the world is ending, you know, and you have to do it with your butt hanging out.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Good thing for him that as he's walking around, one of the most memorable things I think in movies over that last two decades is the opening sequences of 28 Days Later where they cleaned out London. Somehow the production team cleaned out London to the extent where there was just no people around. There's all this rubbish and debris and it looks like the world's ended. But no one is there apart from Cillian Murphy in his hospital gown, which he's just woken up in, and what are you going to do? So as much as he is exposed, yes, that's true, Mark. There's no one really to, excuse this terminology, expose himself to, because no one else is around apart from when he walks around a corner finally and sees a horde of zombies coming his way.
Yeah, and in fact, that's probably another reason to feel vulnerable in a hospital gown.
Two.
I couldn't go past Mad Max from 1979 and the leathers that Mad Max wears.
Where would the end of the world be without leather?
I know, where would the end of the world be without Mad Max? Like, Mad Max has had such a defining impact upon cinema since the late 70s. Everything from adventurous police movies to near future experiences. You wrap all that together and so many people think of Mad Max. And that's a little bit like the hospital gown that Cillian Murphy was wearing in 28 Days Later, where you're just kind of wearing what you wearing normally, like the hoodie that Steve Carell wears in Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. But there was something kind of cool and durable and practical and workmanlike about the leather that Mad Max is wearing, that Mel Gibson is wearing in Mad Max.
Have you ever tried to sit around in leather pants?
Well, doesn't it just strike you as like...
It's not exactly practical.
No, well, okay, practical might be too much. So practical for the work that he's doing, or at least...
I suppose, if you're going to be wading through the apocalypse.
Well, I'm presuming it is, because police officers, or at least in Mad Max, according to Mad Max, they're wearing it all the time, and he seems to get around fine. So I was figuring, oh, well, that looks pretty comfortable then. So it's the world's going to end. I like the fact that it was kind of business as usual for Mad Max, that he didn't flip out, he didn't lose his mind. Well, he did lose his mind. Lose his mind about his wardrobe, Mark. What am I going to wear? I'm just going to wear what I'm wearing.
What about leather care? I mean, honestly, at the end of the world, seriously, if you're busy, you're shooting things up, you're racing in car accidents and stuff, and then you go, oh gosh, I'm never going to get this out of leather. Where's the leather treatment?
Yeah, true. You had me there. I didn't think through the Mad Max wardrobe enough, but still, it ranks very highly on my list, but not nearly as highly as...
One.
This is a movie, Mark, that I debated about whether to include this in the list because I think a lot of people haven't seen it, may never have heard of it, will think it's just an obscure choice. But
it's French, isn't it?
I think the choice, there is a French actress in it, but and it's directed by a Danish guy, but it was in English. But I think the choice still stands. So this is a film called Melancholia from 2011, which is one of the strangest end of the world movies I think you'll ever see. It's more like an art house meditation on the end of the world, so therefore it's more depressing than exhilarating. And it's about this asteroid, Hainsworth, called Melancholia, which is basically a metaphor, a massive metaphor, saying depression is going to end us all and there's nothing we can do about it. The lead character in this film, Justine, is played by Kirsten Dunst, and she wears a wedding dress all the way through this movie.
Wow.
Talk about going out in style, Mark. She's wearing a wedding dress. What caught my attention about this particularly, in comparison to everything from nappies to hoodies to leather outfits, is it actually reminded me of this, all these metaphors and images that go on through the New Testament about people who follow Jesus, are Christians. They're going to be the bride of Christ. And that kind of image we can, you know, not like, it just kind of floats past us. But seeing this wedding dress that Justine is wearing in Melancholia got me thinking about the end of the world, according to the Bible, isn't just going to be everything explodes and there's nothing afterwards. There's going to be a new heaven, a new earth. We're going to get new bodies, those who follow in Jesus. And at this point in time, you're going to have this intimate relationship with God and Jesus that is going to go so close to being like a bride, a marriage relationship, that there was something fantastic about this representation of Justine wearing a wedding dress in Melancholia. I'm not saying the film was trying to do what I just said there, but that's what it reminded me of. And so, that's why it's at number one.
So I just want to ask you, before you hit the clip, your choice at the end of the world, hospital gown or wedding dress?
And I'm going to suit up for a wedding dress.
Won't even bother saying how late you are.
So sorry, guys.
We're only there. Mm-hmm. That was 2 hours ago.
Toast to the bride and the groom.
Made it!
Hello!
You look glowing today.
No.
never seen you look so happy.
I'm thrilled about this wedding, and I know it's costing John a lot of money.
It's not about the cost. I thought you really wanted this. But I do.
Can I fit you out for a wedding dress, Mark?
Mate, I would rather have my butt hanging out being chased by zombies than face the end of the world in a wedding dress. Though I might go for the nappy.
I would rather not you have any of those things on. That was this week, Mark. Coming that's up on next flattering. Week's show, we're now at the end of this show. What are we doing next week?
Well, look, we've got heaps coming up next week. Roald Dahl and Steven Spielberg unite with the BFG. Could this be the family film heaven you've been waiting for?
There are Oscar winners and nominees who star in this new drama called Maggie's Plan, but should you choose this, make up your morality as you go along farce.
And is the latest film starring Harry Potter, actor Daniel Radcliffe, the weirdest movie of 2016?
Is it? Find out next week when I will definitely be Ben McKechnie, probably not wearing a wedding dress.
And I'll be Mark Adley. See you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.